From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, December 16th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
President Joe Biden officially bestowed national monument status onto several acres of land along the Damariscotta River today in honor of the nation's first female cabinet secretary. Frances Perkins was instrumental in creating the labor laws and regulations that still protect most American workers today. As Kevin Miller reports, our Newcastle homestead will now be managed by the National Park Service.
Frances Perkins had already worked as Governor Franklin Delano Roosevelt's top labor official in New York State for several years when the newly elected president asked her to join his administration in Washington, D.C. It was 1933, the heart of the Great Depression, and a woman had never held a cabinet post before. But as Biden told a crowd on Monday, Perkins seemed unfazed by the challenge ahead.
And the story goes, after Franklin Roosevelt asked her to become his labor secretary, Frances Perkins immediately responded by outlining her goals, what she wanted done. She said, I want unemployment relief, overtime pay, child labor laws, minimum wage, workers' compensation, national health insurance, and Social Security.
Over the next 12 years, Perkins would achieve nearly all of those goals as a key architect of what is now called Roosevelt's New Deal, a federal minimum wage, Social Security benefits, workers' comp, the right to unionize and engage in collective bargaining, unemployment benefits. Those all began during Perkins' tenure as labor secretary.
Today, I'm proud to stand here in the Frances Perkins building, headquarters of the Labor Department, to designate Frances Perkins Homestead in Newcastle, Maine, a national monument.
Perkins grew up in Massachusetts and lived for many years in New York and the Washington, D.C. area. But the place she always considered home was her family's saltwater farm located along the Damariscotta River. She summered there as a child, returned year after year, and sought refuge from the stress and turmoil of Washington there. Perkins is buried in Newcastle.
This was the place that she came to throughout her career to contemplate, restore, think, really clear her head from her incredibly intense career.
Giovanna Gray Lockhart is executive director of the Frances Perkins Center, a nonprofit that purchased the 57-acre homestead from the Perkins family and has now donated a portion of the land for the national monument.
She's one of those people in history who, you know, sort of flew under the radar, but thanks to President Biden and the National Park Service, that won't be the case.
The Perkins homestead now joins Katahdin Woods and Waters as the second national monument in Maine, and only the third in New England. As part of the agreement, the National Park Service will now own and manage 2.3 acres that includes a brick farmhouse dating back to 1837, a post and beam barn, and the surrounding gardens. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland recalled how she could feel Perkins' presence last August as she walked through the house still filled with her books, typewriter, and multiple hard hats. She credited the Perkins family and the Frances Perkins Center for safeguarding that legacy.
Today, we're here to honor that vision and to bring forward America's storyteller, the National Park Service, to help tell her story and steward her homestead.
Exactly how the Park Service will operate the Perkins site remains unclear. But Giovanna Lockhart Gray says the Frances Perkins Center will work with the Park Service to develop educational programming and tours potentially by this summer. The Perkins Center will retain ownership of the surrounding property. Laura Fortman followed in Perkins' footsteps decades later, serving as labor commissioner to Governor John Baldacci and now Governor Janet Mills. She was also a deputy administrator at the U.S. Department of Labor during the Obama years and executive director of the Frances Perkins Center. Fortman says she looks forward to seeing how the monument can help educate the public about how programs that Perkins helped to create, like Social Security and unemployment insurance, are now part of the safety net that many people take for granted.
Anytime there is a recession, those are critical programs that people rely on today. it makes the difference between, you know, abject poverty and being able to keep a roof over your head and food on the table.
The proclamation signed by Biden on Monday calls on the National Park Service to preserve the property and, quote, interpret in its entirety the story of Francis Perkins and the history of the New Deal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Harvard Pilgrim has agreed to continue insurance coverage in Maine for two HIV medications. The insurance company had planned to drop coverage for the drugs in its 2025 marketplace and small employer plans. Several physicians and advocates filed a discrimination complaint, which prompted an investigation by the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Superintendent Bob Carey says the Bureau will make sure that people with HIV or other conditions aren't discriminated against. The executive director of the Portland-based Frannie Peabody Center welcomed the news, but says most of their clients have moved to a different carrier to make sure they had coverage. Four children escaped their group home in their pajamas Sunday afternoon, eventually leading to a boy being rescued from Graham Lake after he fell through the ice. Maddie Smith has more.
The boy, along with three others, were reported missing by Kids Peace, their group home, at 12:30 p.m., launching a search and rescue by the Ellsworth Fire and Police Department and the Maine Warden Service. The boys, all 12 years old, left the facility during a false fire alarm activation 30 minutes earlier. The first boy was found at 3 p.m. and alerted authorities that another boy had fallen through the ice, according to Ellsworth Deputy Police Chief Sean Willey. At 4:15, the boy had been taken out of the water via canoe, and everyone was off the ice. Three of the boys were taken to Maine Coast Memorial Hospital to be treated for exposure and hypothermia, and all are expected to be okay, according to the Ellsworth Police Department. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
Maine has collected about $6 million in total revenue during the state's first full year of sports betting. Sportsbook wagering went live last November. The Wabanaki Nations collect half of all gross receipts. The state receives about 10% of the revenue after player payouts and federal taxes. Milt Champion, the commissioner of Maine's Gambling Control Unit, says he expects state revenues will remain about the same in future years.
I think Maine's really close to their saturation point. In other words, people are not going to go out and get a second job so they can go to the casino and sports wager. You know, it's just not going to happen. So you do one or the other or a little bit of both.
More than 75% of wagers were made on DraftKings online betting platform, which the Passamaquoddy tribe has partnered with. The rest were made on Caesars Sportsbook, which inked deals with the remaining three tribes in Maine. Residents of the town of Denmark have adopted a water extraction ordinance intended to strengthen protections of the town's resource. But as Susan Sharon reports, some think it could have gone further.
Against the backdrop of a changing climate, the ordinance is specifically intended to ensure that water withdrawals by Poland Spring and its new parent company, Primo Brands, are sustainable. But two members of the committee that worked on the ordinance for more than 2.5 years say it doesn't go far enough. Audrey Rabinowitz says there are a few things missing from the final language.
One was a town-wide cap on the amount of water that could be extracted for commercial export. We voted on that as a committee, and it was voted down 3-2.
Also missing, says Rabinowitz, is a requirement that the company share real-time data showing how much water is being withdrawn. Committee member Laurie LaMountain, who also serves on the town's planning board, says she's pleased that pumping can now be halted if water levels drop below a certain point. But overall, she agrees the ordinance could have been stronger.
It's better. Is it what we really wanted or no?
The ordinance was approved in a special town meeting by a unanimous vote. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
State agricultural officials say they are preparing to meet the requirements of a new national milk testing strategy to detect the avian influenza virus in raw milk. Carol Bousquet has more.
The USDA says raw unpasteurized milk is a vehicle for the spread of the highly pathogenic avian influenza through equipment, people, and between dairies. The federal order requires mandatory testing of raw milk, including the collection of samples at facilities that ship, receive, or transfer bulk raw cow's milk intended for pasteurization. The order also requires laboratories, state veterinarians, and herd owners to report positive test results in raw milk samples obtained from livestock. A Maine Department of Agriculture spokesman says staff are participating in USDA webinars and coordinating the roles and responsibilities that will be required for Maine's eventual implementation of the multi-phase strategy. The state says it's also assessing how the new federal rules align with Maine's dairy industry and public health objectives. The state official says there have been no cases of the virus detected in Maine dairy cattle. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
Damage from brown-tail moth caterpillar infestations declined more than 90% this year, according to the Maine Forest Service. The invasive caterpillars defoliated an estimated 2,100 acres across the state, down from more than 45,000 acres last year. Forest Service entomologist Brittany Shopak says the state benefited this year from what she calls the Goldilocks effect of weather conditions.
The just right of how much rain we need to actually see these pathogens to knock down these populations.
In addition to deadly viral and fungal outbreaks, Shopak says locally driven mitigation efforts helped tamp down populations across the state. Even as the Forest Service registered a decline in brown-tail moth, it found another invasive species, the emerald ash borer, is spreading south in Aroostook County. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, the prevalence of so-called forever chemicals in firefighting foam across the state. I'm Nicole LaGrisco. Thanks for listening.